Well, it gives me great pleasure today to welcome a very eclectic guest, a man that is, first of all, he's a doctor. Dr. Andrew Taylor, who has a practice in Port Moody, and who has always been interested in real estate and investing in real estate and building real estate in Canada. And then one day he said, you know what? There must be more out there. And now he's building and buying and going all over the world. And we are very, very happy to have you join us today and tell us how it's done.
Thank you, Ozzy. It wasn't quite that simple, but overall, I started my real estate learning in about 1989. And I'd gone to a seminar by an American guy called Charles J. Givens. And, you know, in that presentation, it was basically about how to live life on your terms and not be basically having to work all the time, and techniques and strategy. His most important one, I felt, was real estate and buying and owning real estate. So after that seminar, I started reading about real estate, and probably in 1992, I took the plunge. And in that year, I bought my own condo, a rental condo, and then a commercial strata unit for my clinic, and maybe bit off more than I could chew, but I certainly jumped in with both feet, and I learned a lot. It was great. And, you know, we had a clinic that was in Coquitlam at that time for 18 years until I moved the clinic to Port Moody. So real estate has been really good to me, but it definitely is a lot about taking action. So I've met so many people who talk about real estate, who go to seminars, and I see them 5 years later and they're like, I haven't bought anything yet. But, you know,
it's as you know, you're part of our real estate action group. And that was when I started that in the year 2000. The word action was key, right? The real estate action group, you know, not just the real estate talking group. But I mean, people take action, and then some people take no action, but you take massive action, because once you were a little unhappy with maybe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe with the government and all of the things that you had to do in Canada, you decided to look around the world, and then you went into the United States, into Utah of all places.
Right. You know, you're partially responsible for that, because you were talking about Justin Trudeau bringing in the capital gains tax on the primary residence. And at that moment in time, I think that was like 2018 or 2019, you started talking about it. And it really resonated with me, because what I was seeing was the government pension plans that exist for government workers and unionized employees doesn't apply to people who are self-employed.
All right.
And so if you're self-employed, you have to somehow create an income when you're retiring, or you just never retire. You work until you die, basically.
Yeah.
And so unionized and government employees have the option of retiring potentially at 55 with, I don't know, between $3,000 and $5,000. To create that kind of income, a self-employed person has to have a minimum of $1 million saved up in the bank and earning interest at a decent rate. That doesn't exist for nearly everyone that's self-employed. So when you talk to me about capital gains being removed, that was like, well, that was my nest egg. That was what I was planning on selling and giving me $1 million to live off as I got older, because I didn't have a pension. I also researched the US, and in the US, they get to write off their mortgage interest, which we don't. They pay tax when they sell their homes, but they get to write off that interest. So we don't get to write off our interest, and then we're going to get taxed on that on our personal home as well. So we have no advantages. The only advantage becomes I'm a unionized government employee with a pension and I'm set for life. And if you're self-employed, take risks, and an action taker, we're coming after you and going to make it really difficult. So that was the political climate that I felt that British Columbia was in, and on a strong trajectory.
But why Utah? Why Utah?
Well, that's an interesting story. It's I was reading a book. Actually, I have that book right here in my little stash. It's a book by Neil Peart, the drummer of Rush.
Ghostwriter.
Oh, Ghostwriter. And it was based on his wife and his daughter died. So he drove around on his motorbike for about 2 years trying to find himself. In that book, he was writing about a little town in Utah called Moab. And it just resonated with me. It jumped out of the page and it stuck in my head.
How do
So
you
I just took
spell it? How do you spell it? Mo
Moab,
Moab.
a
Okay.
biblical word, actually.
Okay.
So basically, I was teaching in Salt Lake City, and I thought, I'm going to go to Moab. It's only 4 hours away. Rented a car. I drove down there. And as you're driving into Moab, there's these amazing red rocks like everywhere. It just looks like you're on Mars. And I had this deja vu feeling of,
This is
I've been
it.
here before. You know, this is, I've lived here before. And I drove into town and I just felt like I'd come home. And I drove around the center of town a little bit. And I found like a 4 block radius that I just fell in love with. It just felt like this is where I want to be. And I went into a real estate store, asked anything come for sale in this little area, and hardly anything ever comes for sale, and if it does, it gets snapped up. So I went home, went on realtor.com, plugged in what I wanted. 5 days later, poop, up pops this little orchard in the center of town. 10 days later, I'm in Moab in the title office signing the documents, and we basically bought. I involved a friend of mine. I roped him in. We bought it together. So we're down there, and we're right next to the lot. There's a mobile home park for sale. It's like 2 acres in the center of Moab, and it's like the place is basically falling apart. And I thought, wow, that would be amazing for a townhouse development. Let's do that. So I think they wanted like 2.1 million or something for it. My friend and I phoned up the realtor that we knew. We're driving back to Salt Lake City and we met her at a little place called Helper in a coffee shop. We're signing the document, putting in an offer at 2.1 million, which was the asking price. As we're sitting there, she gets a call. The price has dropped for the mobile home park for 1.7 million. So we're
Oh,
like, score that out, score
yeah.
that out.
It was meant to
This
be.
new offer of 1.7. And we put no conditions because we'd actually explored it. We'd gone to City Hall. We made sure there was no rights of ways, anything when we were actually there. So we put the subject free offer. Although we didn't have financing, so we were having to get creative on that one. But so we our offer got accepted because we were subject free. There was apparently like 20 offers came in like with that price reduction, but it took ours because we had no subjects, including financing. So when the realtor found out we needed financing, she was really annoyed. But luckily,
Well,
we managed to get a bank loan actually through a credit union, a small credit union in Utah.
we
So,
find generally credit unions and local credit unions always your best bet, particularly if the deal is a little off center, like you're coming from out of town, for instance. Yeah, I know that sounds good. So you started building townhouses.
So yeah, fast forward, we took possession. COVID hit. We couldn't go down to the States for two and a half years. I just sat there, and we had to hire management companies to do everything. So our plans just kind of got put on hold. So we put the Moab and the U.S. townhome deal on hold. And it was, I think it was March 2020. I was looking out my window at the clinic, and we basically shut down. And we weren't treating patients anymore. Nothing was going on, and I had one of those epiphany moments where I was going, "Wow, I'm getting old," and I really haven't traveled much around the world. Like I've traveled a little bit, but nothing major. And I joined this international real estate group, and they were talking about like various locations, their top 20 list of destinations. And I called my friends, who most of them are self-employed, not all of them, but most, and I said, you know, we really need a plan for retirement. And why not retire in a warm country? At least part of the time, right? And everyone was totally on board. I said, we can Airbnb these units. We can have it in multiple locations. So that's basically how it started. We different projects had different people in it. Because I had fairly decent size friend size group, and everyone, I think because of COVID, was like, I'm on board going somewhere warm, but having some fun.
So
So that's
Portugal
kind of,
came up.
yeah. And then Portugal came up. Tulum, Playa de Carmen, Panama, Spain, Cabo San Lucas. Where else? Yeah, so basically those locations all overseas. And the way I kind of looked at it and explained it to my friends and partners was, we have a Europe location, we have like a South American location in Panama, we have with me and another friend have it the place in the US, and then we have like the East Coast of Mexico and then the West Coast of Mexico. So
And
we
when you're saying we have that, you mean you're buying real estate in those areas?
We're buying real estate deals. So basically at that time, a lot of developers and everyone in the world was like, the world's coming to an end and we need to sell stuff. So and we're or they were in beginning a project or in the middle of a project. So there was a lot of deals to be had. Like the ones we bought in Spain were like foreclosure sales. The ones we bought in Portugal, I knew one of the guys who owned like the one of the biggest real estate firms in the Algarve. And I called him and he said, well, funnily enough, I have a deal for you. And
Just so
he,
happened.
yeah, it just so happens that he was actually just arrived. I think he just got off a flight and he said, I don't normally answer the phone, but I saw it was you. And I'd answer. I just intuitively knew. He said, I just come off a Tony Robbins course and I was feeling inspired. And for some reason, I had to talk to you. So basically, he offered me two penthouses that were not being offered to the general public or any of these real estate groups. So I
So
bought one.
these were to be built.
These were to
These,
be built, so
and this
pre-sales.
which city in Portugal was that?
That
Is
was in
that
Lagos.
Lagos? Yeah, I was
Yeah.
there, I guess, in 2018. We stayed in the in Albufeira, and then we drove all up the coast. And Lagos is a great little city, you know. And I mean, the location is great. It's a harbor town. There's a lot of history in town, and so it's certainly a great place to pick.
Yeah, I when we because we bought without seeing because it was during COVID, so we're kind of please be a good location.
This is, by the way,
And
not
be a
what I
good condo.
teach. This is, I don't teach that. I
I
always
know,
say,
I know, I
go
know.
there.
That I was like I jumped off a cliff and hoped someone would catch me. So luckily I got caught. So I did trust my friend who promoted it. So yeah, we went I think in 2022, basically as soon as we could fly, we went to Portugal and Spain to look at the properties we bought. And we bought two in Spain and we bought two in Portugal.
Where was that in Spain? Which place?
Just near Marbella,
Oh,
so
yeah,
the
nice
Costa
area.
del Sol.
Yeah.
It's on a, they're both on a golf course, and so it's in a golf course gated kind of community on a hill, with really nice views. And it was kind of around that time period I got into this idea of why don't we buy two units? And then when they get delivered, maybe after a year or so, once the market's stabilized after the condos have been delivered and we've rented them out for a year or two, then we sell the other one and pay off the other mortgage. And that's kind of where that's where we are kind of on our journey just now. We're in the process of selling one, paying off the other, and it seems to be playing out really well. So we're able to pay off the mortgage on the one that we're keeping. And then still have some money, or at least a much smaller mortgage. So,
Yeah, because you need your money too, because you then went from there into Mexico.
exactly. So, and then I introduced more friends into these theories. So, there was a deal in Tulum that came up, and I just the price was so good, right? It was hard to
You got
refuse.
to tell me the name of the place again. What is it?
And
Yeah, so.
Tulum on. And they basically, I did a bit of research and they were building this mine train from Cancun and it was going around the peninsula and Tulum was on the stop. So before you had to fly into Cancun and if you stayed in Playa de Carmen or Tulum, you basically had to get a taxi or a shuttle bus to
To here.
take you down there. And it was a good hour. And by taking the train, it was much faster. It was much easier to get around, and they were building an international airport, and they felt their tourism would dramatically go. So it's kind of ticked all the real estate boxes: infrastructure, growth, more jobs, and so we figured that was a safe bet. And then we bought two, actually three units ultimately in Playa de Carmen. We do plan on selling two of them and just keeping the one. But we'll do it slowly over time because generally, when you buy a pre-sale, they get delivered. 40% of the people want to sell immediately and try and
Right.
cash out.
Lots of
That's a
competition.
yeah. So you basically you're fighting amongst each other who can go the lowest fastest, right,
Yeah.
to sell the price, right? So we're either doing short-term rentals with these units or long-term rentals unfurnished, so we can.
But you also plan to go down there and stay a little bit longer in Mexico, even do some work down there?
Yeah, so basically work-wise, there's things in Canada where medicine has really advanced a lot in other places in the world, and Canada hasn't followed that. So I decided to work less in Canada, and go somewhere warm. Basically, I wanted to spend my life in summer all year round. And so how to achieve that became, okay, if I want to be in summer all year round, I don't like cold weather. I'm originally from Scotland, and it's windy and cold and
And
rainy
rain. Yeah.
345 days of the year. And while I love Vancouver, because of Vancouver Island, there's no wind here in Vancouver. It's wonderful. So I came from Edinburgh, and the wind was terrible. So I wanted somewhere warm, not windy, and to be there for. So basically, my plan was to go and work in Cabo Because, and be there from November to March and
Do you
work in.
how do you do that? How do you get license? Do you get a visa for Mexico or work permit or?
Yeah, so what I did initially is I got a temporary work permit, then I got a permanent residency permit so I can live there all
That
year
it was
round.
relatively easy or what did you had to show assets or?
You have to show a monthly income above a certain level. So you're not going down there and basically becoming a liability to
Yeah.
the you're contributing something. There was for the temporary visa, you just needed to have traveled to Mexico before 2020 to get a temporary visa for 4 years. And then at the end of the 4 years, it converts into like permanent residency if you want to apply for that. As long as you meet the income requirements. I decided to get my permanent residency a bit faster because to get a tax ID to pay income tax,
Sure.
you need to have permanent residency and not just the ability to live in Mexico. So I'm lucky because my medical license transfers to Mexico, and basically how it works is you're basically working under a medical doctor team that kind of so your licensure moves over to
Yeah.
there and you're working in a with a team effect. So and the basically the ability to provide patients with more advanced therapies. I can teach more in Mexico than I can in Canada. I taught a lot in the US, but with COVID and everything, it kind of disrupted the flow of
Sure.
teaching, and I basically got out of the habit. So starting in 2026, I think in February, I'll start teaching courses again, and then I'll basically invite the
And you
world.
teach them, as you said, in the US.
Yeah, I used to teach in the US. I haven't done it for a while. And I basically decided Mexico, when I talked to people who were really interested in coming and learning stuff that we do, they all said, I don't want to have a course in the US. I want to come to Cabo in February where it's nice and warm. And I was like, that's a great idea. So,
Like-minded individuals,
exactly. So that's kind of how it sort of evolved. Everyone went, February is when I want to travel when it's snowy in the US.
So you got real estate in Port Moody, and then you got real estate in Portugal, and you got real estate that you just finished building in Moab, and then you got Mexico, and now I think we missed one. Was Panama. What are you doing in Panama?
Yeah, so Panama was again a pre-sale. So it was kind of buying sight unseen, but there was a lot of development there already. And it was a development by one of the bigger Panamanian builders. He built islands, like artificial islands in the bay there, and then built high rises on them. And this was a development an hour from Panama, and it was beachfront, true waterfront beachfront. And we decided to buy into, I think it's like 11 story condos, and we ended up getting the penthouse units for those because we either buy the worst units from a real estate perspective or the best, but we try not to get the middle end
Yeah.
because if we're going to rent them out, you might as well have the cheapest unit because you're
Sure.
renting them out as the same amount as the people in the middle range, and then people who are willing to pay more will pay more for a penthouse view, and
Right.
so it's either the best or the worst, and nothing in between. So that's kind of our rule of thumb. And in Panama, we went for the penthouses. We bought two because we want to flip one ultimately, and then pay off the other one.
That's the method, right? You buy two and
Yeah,
then.
that's kind of the method that I adopted, and it's playing out really well so far. Like so far, it's 100%. It's actually textbook. It's almost scary. Like everything I've done in real estate has never been quite so textbooky. So it's always been like, whoa, one thing after another, and you're like recoiling, like
But you've
how.
done well. I mean, when you look at the building that you have and where you have your office in Port Moody, it's, that was a great move to buy all those that big commercial property, and then you build duplexes on lots that were left over. Now, so when I ask you where do you live, you live in four countries then.
That's the plan. Yeah, my plan is to live in Cabo from November to March, then go to Moab in Utah and use that as a base for traveling around the US from April, May, and then maybe some of June depending on the summer in BC, then come back to BC if it's warm and not rain, and then spend basically June, July, and August here, and then
Now,
September.
you're married, right? How does your wife feel about the moving around?
She was on the fence at first, and I'm gonna miss my Zumba classes. I said, "We'll just find different locations for your
Yeah,
Zumba classes."
maybe
So,
teach them.
yeah, exactly. So
Well, I
she's
think
also.
there's, as a doctor, you're specializing in treating sort of acute and chronic injuries and motor vehicle accident-related pains and whiplash and muscle and facial restrictions. Maybe you can do something on my face. No, but anyways, is that the kind of doctor work that is needed, like in Mexico and on different places as well, I assume?
One of the things that really inspired me to go there was the fact that you have access to a lot more modalities that can get people better that I can't use in Canada, and it's frustrating. And also when I was in Mexico, I saw a lot of people who were like. They have a very large social economic structure there. There's incredibly poor people and incredibly wealthy Mexicans all over the map, but they have a very good middle class. Mexico is really coming out there from where it used to be when I was traveling there in the 80s and 90s. But there was people I saw walking around, especially construction workers who were injured, and I sort of talked to them and said, what access do you have for medical care? And they were like, well, I'm just over here from the mainland working on a contract. I don't really have money to do that. I send all my money home to my family. So I talked to my lawyer who was doing like a project for us, incorporating, which is complicated in Mexico. And I told him I really want to create an outreach clinic in Cabo where we can treat people for free. Mexicans, and then they can just come and get treatment, and then I can train Mexican doctors in these techniques, so we can start not just treating wealthy people but also people who really need it, because that's what my passion is, right? Helping people and seeing them get better. So I mean part of it that comes from I got really badly injured in a couple of accidents, and it was really hard to get well. And I luckily found the right people. They taught me their techniques, but I had to promise to teach them to the rest of my days. Most of those guys are dead now, so like the pressure is on me to continue
Continue,
teaching
yeah.
those techniques, because otherwise that knowledge will kind of die out. So I basically saw there was a need in Mexico. I was passionate about it, and that's kind of one of my goals. So it's not just about making money and working in Mexico. It's more like I'm a big believer, if you're not growing, you're dying. So I want to be doing.
Well, it's true. I mean, the old story that Tony Robbins actually always taught, it's like a bicycle ride. You got to keep pedaling, because if you stop pedaling, you have some momentum for a while, but eventually you're going to fall over if you don't keep going. Now, in our last 5 or 10 minutes, we say quickly you go to Portugal and you buy real estate, or you go to Mexico. But I understand that in Portugal or Spain, in those places, you also have something that's called like a golden visa. So is it relatively easy to get a visa in Portugal?
They changed the rules a lot in the last 2 years. Yeah. So before you had to spend a certain amount of money on real estate, and then you could start the golden visa process. And then they created restrictions on the process because it became so successful.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of old properties in Porto and Lisbon that were like old mansions. People came in and they threw money at them, turned them into Airbnbs that had like 20 bedrooms, and suddenly the rents in Lisbon and Porto went skyrocketing, and there wasn't enough accommodation for the locals. A familiar theme that we see playing out around the world. But instead of building more, as you know, they blame everyone for the lack of homes. And it's, you know, not you and I know, it's regulation, taxing, government taxing, local authority taxing, making it difficult to do developments. That's the real ultimate cause. So with that, because there was a new government in Portugal and they introduced, they removed the what's known as the AL, which is what we would call short-term rentals. And then they restricted the golden visa. So you had to buy commercial real estate, I think, to get that golden visa. I'm not 100%, because when I looked into it, it was before they changed it. So I know it has changed. So don't take what I'm saying for gospel. Yeah. But
well,
I
the
know
golden visa was popular because you actually literally got access to the European common market, the EU.
Yeah.
And you could travel throughout Europe with a golden visa, either in Spain or Portugal. I mean, they're also available in places like Cyprus and so on, and you'd have to check them out. But it's like you say, things are changing all the time, and so you have to figure out what is good for you. Primarily, also, if you have some money, and what is the tax situation? Generally speaking, would I be correct in saying that the tax situation is better in those countries than it is here?
No, you're not right. You're wrong. It's actually, there in Spain, I think what would be called the HST is 21%.
Wow.
And in Portugal, it is 23%. So,
but do they charge you HST on selling the property then?
On the real estate? There are taxes, but I don't think they charge the HST version on that.
No.
So,
yeah.
You're not paying that tax. But it's like if you're going out to a restaurant, supermarket goods, furniture, that was one of the things. We were just looking at furnishing in Portugal, and we were getting quotes from Spain and Portugal just because of the massive fluctuation in prices and taxes. So I'm trying to figure out which was the best way forward. So cars are much cheaper in Spain than Portugal. But food is dramatically cheaper in Portugal, beer and wine, all those kind of things. So if you're
important,
actually,
important things. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Beer, wine, teas, Camembert is like next
yes,
to nothing.
Yeah, Camembert, very important. Yeah.
So their index is really good. So as a place to live, Aussie, that might be an alternative for you down the road. But so once you're there and established and living there, the cost of actually living there are very reasonable. It's the lowest in Europe. So I think I saw an article recently that said to buy a beer in Portugal was €2, and in Germany it was €8, in France 6 or 7. So like not just a small difference, a very
so big. So if you actually have an eye on making that move out of Canada, or certainly, I guess most of the investor types that I know, they're interested in, you know, do I need to invest 250,000 or 500,000 euro, and will that get me the visa? And so that's a question you have to answer, get answered from the local offices of each country that you're planning on, because they're different, right? And and then what exactly do I get? How many weeks a year do I need to spend there, right? I mean, some have restrictions that way and some have no restrictions. So it's it depends on how much the government of a specific country wants capital to come in and wants people to come in. I know in Italy you could go and buy a house for $1, right? Because some of those little towns, they saw everybody was leaving and they said, okay, we have this, we get no taxes on these old houses, so you can buy them for $1. And in some places in Italy it worked out like a charm, and in some places it didn't work out at all, right? So so yeah, it's like with everything, you have to take action and you have to go to these places. But I don't know anybody that takes as much action in as many different countries at the same time as you do.
Yeah, it can be a bit overwhelming sometimes. Sometimes I go to sleep and I'm like, oh, what am I doing? That's crazy. But it generally is all working out really well.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer of being able to pivot and look at stuff in multiple ways. My mind is one that just doesn't stop thinking. When I was working, like basically working at work, I worked like 5 days a week, 10, 11-hour days for 35 years. And, you know, I basically could have kept going doing that for maybe another 20. But, you know, I've seen so many people over the years through patients. They're like 70 years old. They're going, they've sold their house. They're about to retire. One of them gets sick and then they can't afford the insurance because now they've got exclusions and they don't travel at all. And you know, they move
over.
And
no question. Like, health is number one. I think Steve Jobs made a famous quote saying that no matter what it is that you own, what you have and whatnot, the one important thing that you own is good health. And you will never appreciate it until you don't have it anymore. And then quite often it's too late. So there's no question about it. I salute you. I salute you with the actions you take. You know, like in our real estate action groups over the years, we have always some people that stand out, and you certainly lead everybody. As I mean, oh, now, where did he go? Is he still in Portugal? Oh, no, he's just in Moab, which is a place I never, of course, couldn't even spell. If somebody, I don't know whether you want to talk to anybody, but if somebody wants to get a hold of you, can we put your contact information below? On
I'm happy to answer questions and stuff.
And so you do you take new patients or depends?
I'm not in Canada. I haven't taken any new patients in Canada because I basically trying to slowly move away from here. Because when I'm going to be working in Canada. I'm probably going to come back and forth because my son's going to be living in Canada, and I'll treat patients for maybe the week I'm in town, and I'll probably treat them when I'm back in Canada in the summer here. But I won't be like available like the way I am now. So,
but you also might be interested if somebody's interested in maybe investment or whatever to get in touch with you. We'll have the contact information below. And for those of you that are dear listeners that are listening to on our various podcast locations on Apple or Amazon or Spotify, just send a note to osbuzz.ca to my attention, and I'll send you Andrew Taylor's contact information. Do you have any last words of wisdom for us?
I'd say listen to you, because I've actually based so many of my decisions based on your research and contacts and information. I started getting your information probably around 92 or 94, somewhere around there. And then by that, in those days, it was Aussie by facts.
Facts by facts.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was on a Friday it came out. And I used to always enjoy that. So I based a lot of decisions. And in the 90s, the real estate market of BC was down the toilet. Like, it was terrible. Yeah. Like, I bought a house, an old heritage house that was in terrible shape, gutted it, redid all the floors, took all the carpets out. It was all plaster, and it had not been tube electric. But I had to learn to become an electrician and a plasterer and a carpenter. But and after I'd done that renovation, it spent probably at least $50,000 out of $10,000 more. I was
Yeah, well, the big thing is, you know, in 1998, that's when I wrote my book, Forget About Location, Location. It was timing, right? You had bought in the early 90s or the late 90s. There was a world of difference to always these influences, you know, that over time, it doesn't matter. It's always going to go higher. But at the specific time that you buy, you know, that's why I wrote in my newsletter in 2022, the high is in place. I did not think that that $2 million right. house in Surrey would go now. And we're talking an average kind of a house, right? It would be going on. So there's that timing aspect. So, but look, thank you so much for taking the time out from your incredibly hectic schedule. And you're a sight to behold because, you know, if you're being asked where you live, you say in four countries.
Where would you like to come visit?
Thank you so much. And all the best to all your future countries that you're going to be invested in. Take care.
Thank you. And keep giving that wonderful advice because I really, truly listen to it. I know when you were saying when the high was in place and I made a plan based on the interest rate abnormalities to sell a whole bunch of stuff in BC. I knew the high was in place in 2021 and we sold most of our stuff, multiple bids. And I really appreciate it. I wouldn't be doing all this stuff if I hadn't followed your advice. So
well, you're I would very say, kind.
Follow Aussie. And you'll do well.
Okay. On that very interesting note, we say bye-bye.
Great. Thank you so much. Bye then.